Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
This is part 19 of Liberalism, the New Improved Broad Road to Destruction. Just a little house cleaning before I begin. Last week I was speaking of the event known as Together 2016, which is going to take place next month in July. And some of the featured speakers, which include Mark Batterson. And I had referred to him, but I couldn't remember the name of his book, which is really a bad book, but you need to know about it because he was one of the speakers that was going to be there, who, along with Pope Francis, unfortunately. And the name of his book was The Circle Maker. And really bad stuff, but I had forgotten the name of it. And, of course, we don't have time to go into that right now. So I wanted to move on now. We left off. I had been examining the connection with Thomas Merton, the Catholic Trappist monk, and the Dalai Lama. And, of course, Dalai Lama's connection to Pope John Paul II, who I had spoken of in the past, in their connection. And then, of course, Pope Francis, the next link in the chain, and his connection also to Thomas Merton. But I wanted to wrap up the collection of notes, etc., that were part of the CD that I had that I was reading from last week, explaining more about the Dalai Lama and Thomas Merton's collaboration. The name of this group, the Monastic Interreligious Dialogue, it says this about the group, and from here on I will refer to them as MID. They were established in 1978 by the Benedictine Confederation to assume a leadership role in the dialogue between Christianity and the great religions of the East, and to work in cooperation with all others engaged in this dialogue. The mission of MID is to encourage the participation of North American Christian monastics in conversations, encounters, and mutual exchange between monastics of different traditions. MID sponsors conferences and seminars on East-West dialogue and monastic spirituality. Intermonastic exchange includes Buddhists of Tibet, Theravada, and Zen. Those are three forms of Buddhism, as well as Hindu and Islam traditions. The purpose is to initiate a conversation among Christian or so-called Christian monastics and extend hospitality to monastics of Eastern religions, to raise consciousness of Christians to the spiritual value of other religious traditions, increase understanding and appreciation among Christian monastics and others of the significance of interreligious dialogue in promoting mutual understanding and peace. Make available to Christian monastics and others expertise, experience, education, resources, and information pertinent to monastic interreligious dialogue. Develop hospitality and mutual exchange with monastics of other religions and encourage monasteries to take local initiative in such encounters. To promote dialogue of the heart through sharing meditation and spiritual practices. Nothing that's included in this, these purposes that of this group have anything whatsoever to do with fulfilling the great commission that Christ gave to his true disciples, his true Christian disciples, to share the gospel, John 3:16. Of course, what can we expect when you commit yourself to working with false religions? Where's that going to get you, right? So anyway, I wanted to finish that up before we moved on. Now, Merton is gone, but Pope Francis, who is actually the first Jesuit pope from the Jesuit order, has stepped up with his interest in Catholic mysticism, otherwise known as contemplative spirituality or contemplative prayer, centering prayer. These are some of the terms. Ray Youngen has written a booklet called Pope Francis and the Thomas Merton Connection. Now, as I continue in my liberalism series, I plan on doing a comprehensive study of the emerging church of contemplative prayer and spirituality, of course, and these movements. But for now, we're going to touch on it as it relates to the interfaith, the interreligious movement that I've been sharing with you the last few podcasts. Now, in page 4 of this booklet by Ray Youngen, and by the way, Ray has been a speaker on Rapture Ready Radio. He's written at least a couple of books, several booklets, excellent research. He's done a great job. And possibly at a future time, he may be speaking on our network again here. But anyway, I really appreciate the work that he does. And on page 4 of this booklet, it says, The Cover Story in Christianity Today's December 24th, 2015, Pope Francis, I'm sorry, proclaims why everyone is flocking to Francis. Christianity Today has its own idea of why everyone is drawn to the Pope. But if I am correct in my conclusions about contemplative spirituality and its outcome, then what is happening here is an occurrence that will affect the lives of millions of people, both Catholic and non-Catholic. Don't worry, that's not your ears ringing. That is my telephone. And I will put that out of the room next time I do my next podcast. But anyway, in his speech to the U.S. Congress on September 24, 2015, Pope Francis praised 4 Americans he admired. One in particular stood out from the perspective of the spiritual future of the world, the Catholic monk Thomas Merton. If you've been reading Lighthouse Trails literature for any length of time, you will know this reference by the Pope is quite sobering and very significant. It is this situation that this booklet will be discussing. And so, you know, as I've mentioned, there's a chain of events here, or of people, including Thomas Merton, the Dalai Lama, Pope John Paul II, and now Pope Francis enters the picture with his interfaith, interreligious, interspirituality desires to help link the religions of the world, and his connection to Thomas Merton, of course, which we find in this booklet, in this helpful booklet. Who is Thomas Merton? What Martin Luther King was to the civil rights movement, and what Henry Ford was to the automobile, Thomas Merton is to contemplative prayer. Although this prayer movement existed centuries before he came along, Merton, a Trappist monk of the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky, took it out of its monastic setting and made it available to and popular with the masses. I personally have been researching Thomas Merton, he says, and the contemplative prayer movement for over 20 years. And for me, hands down, Thomas Merton has influenced the Christian mystical movement more than any person of recent decades. Merton penned one of the most classic descriptions of contemplative spirituality I have ever come across. He explained, "It is a glorious destiny to be a member of the human race. Now I realize what we all are." And of course, I would say a fallen race in need of the redemption of Jesus Christ. But he goes on to say, "If only they, people, could all see themselves as they really are, I suppose the big problem would be that we would fall down and worship each other. At the center of our being is a point of nothingness, which is untouched by sin," what? "And by illusions," what? "A point of pure truth. This little point is the pure glory of God in us. It is in everybody." Now, Ray references the term not pantheism but I don't know why I have problems saying that word, but it's panentheistic, that is, God in everyone view, is similar to the occultic definition of the higher self. In order to understand Merton's connection to mystical occultism, we need first to understand a sect of the Muslim world, the Sufis, who are the mystics of Islam. They chant the name of Allah as a mantra, go into meditative trances, and experience God in everything. A prominent Catholic audio tape company promotes a series of cassettes. Of course, this is cassettes. We do use CDs a lot now. But anyway, Merton, that cassettes that Merton did on Sufism. And let me just mention that I've been to Turkey twice, the country of Turkey. And I've seen the Sufis in action, actually. You may have seen them yourself and not realize what you were actually seeing. These folks that are known as whirling dervishes, they spin around in a circle, supposedly they're dispensing God to people through their hand, which is like a spout. They're like a little teapot or whatever, as they do this little whirling dance, and they're known as whirling dervishes. But these are actually Sufis, who are the mystics of Islam. When I say whirling dervishes, not to be confused with the Tasmanian devil. Now, don't ask me where that came into my thinking, but a whirling dervish, a Tasmanian devil, there might be a little devil in there. In fact, there's no question that there's some demonic deception there. But anyway, this series of cassettes that Merton did on Sufism explains. Merton loved and shared a deep spiritual kinship with the Sufis, the spiritual teachers and mystics of Islam. Here he shares their profound spirituality. To further show Merton's spiritual kinship with Sufism, in a letter to a Sufi master, Merton disclosed, "My prayer tends very much to what you call fana or fana. So what is fana? The Dictionary of Mysticism and the Occult defines it as the act of merging with the divine oneness, meaning all is one and all is God." Merton saw the Sufi concept of fana as being a catalyst for Muslim unity with Christianity, despite the obvious doctrinal differences. In a dialogue with a Sufi leader, Merton asked about the Muslim concept of salvation. The master wrote back stating, "Islam inculcates individual responsibility for one's actions and does not subscribe to the doctrine of atonement or the theory of redemption." And there's emphasis added by Ray. To Merton, of course, this meant little because he believed that fana and contemplation were the same thing. He responded, "Personally, in matters where dogmatic beliefs, like the atonement, differ, I think that controversy is of little value because it takes us away from the spiritual realities into the realm of words and ideas. In words, they are apt to be infinite complexities and subtleties which are beyond resolution. But much more important is the sharing of the experience of divine light." You see, it's all about experience. It's not about words. It's not about the written word. It's not, it's not talking about doctrine. It's talking about experience, experiential Christianity, if you will. And herein lies the problem, as this experience is guided by doctrines of demons and, just demons, let's say. Maybe not so many doctrines, but some doctrine for sure. But deceiving spirits, to be sure. It is here that the area of fruitful dialogue exists between Christianity and Islam. Now, contemplative prayer and the expansion of the Catholic Church. William Shannon, a mysticism proponent and a sympathetic biographer of Thomas Merton, went on to say that, went so far as to say, "Contemplative spirituality has now widely replaced old-style Catholicism. This is not to say the Mass or any of the sacraments have been abandoned, because they haven't, but the underlying spiritual ideology of many in the Catholic Church is now contemplative in its orientation." Speaking of a meeting between the late Pope Paul VI, of course that's before Pope John II, and members of the Catholic Trappist Monastic Order in the 1970s, Thomas Keating disclosed the following. And Keating, of course, is another proponent, one of the major proponents of contemplative spirituality that's popularized it and helped it to even enter into the evangelical church. He disclosed the following. "The pontiff declared that unless the church rediscovered the contemplative tradition, renewal couldn't take place. He specifically called upon the monastics, because they live the contemplative life, to help the laity and those in other religious orders bring that dimension into their lives as well." So maybe not so much that Keating helped bring it into evangelicals, but he was a link in the chain to help promote this dangerous practice, this experiential practice. During his speech, now this is getting back to moving ahead to Pope Francis, Ray says, during his speech to the U.S. Congress, and this is the speech that he referred to earlier when he spoke about four individuals, four Americans, that is, that he really admired. Well, in that speech, Pope Francis said that Thomas Merton sowed peace in the contemplative style. But actually, Merton did something far different than sow peace. He sowed the actual belief systems of other religions, as these two quotes below illustrate. The God Merton knew in prayer was the same experience that Buddhists describe in their enlightenment. In other words, Merton found Buddhist enlightenment in contemplative prayer. Merton's views that God is in every person is summed up in this statement. During a conference on contemplative prayer, the question was put to Thomas Merton, "How can we best help people to attain union with God?" His answer was very clear. We must tell them that they are already united with God. Contemplative prayer is nothing other than coming into consciousness of what is already there. Some of the other quotes that I gave earlier from the Compassion CD notes, as you know, are very similar. Even influential Catholic leaders recognize this and refer to Martin as being a lapsed monk who went wandering in the East seeking consolation, apparently of non-Catholic or non-Christian Eastern spirituality. These new horizons, well, I might say that Pope Francis is probably considered by some Catholic leaders as a lapsed monk too. I'm maybe putting words in their mouth, but anyway, moving back to what Ray was saying, he says these new horizons by Thomas Merton that Pope Francis has found to be exemplar are going to lead to an even greater slide into interspirituality within Catholicism and even evangelical Christianity. In essence, those who are flocking to Pope Francis, as Christianity Today stated in the article that he quoted earlier, are inadvertently flocking to Thomas Merton. Ray says that after writing this booklet at my publisher's headquarters in Montana, I learned that the Parliament of the World Religions was taking place in Salt Lake City, Utah that same week. I decided to head down there and with a media pass was able to enter the conference. What I experienced at the conference has confirmed to me that Pope Francis is without question an ardent interspiritualist on the same page as Thomas Merton. I'm going to stop there, but I'm going to move, and I think that is all I'm going to read to you from that very helpful booklet. Now, there's also another booklet put out by Lighthouse Trails. They put out some great stuff, by the way, a lot of good books and booklets. But they have one called The Jesuit Agenda and the Evangelical Protestant Church. And I also want to read a little bit from that to you, because it's very, very relevant to our discussion here. Now, from page one, we read, and by the way, this report was written by yet another one of our contributors to Rapture Ready Radio, Roger Oakland, and also by David Dombrowski, who is a former Catholic who is actually, I believe he's the owner, the editor, or, well, not the editor, I believe he's the owner of Lighthouse Trails Publishing. But anyway, former Catholic. So both of these gentlemen put together this special report booklet here. And it's quite good. So anyway, it says, according to Bible prophecy, a one-world religion that will offer the promise of peace throughout the world is going to commence prior to Christ's return. To most, this global body will seem like a wonderful thing and very possibly will be a pseudo-Christianity coming in the name of Christ. However, contrary to how the masses will view it, it will actually help establish and set up the Antichrist and his one-world government. In order for this to happen, all religions must come together in an ecumenical plan. Today, as this satanic scheme, today, as part of this satanic scheme, the evangelical Protestant church is being drawn seductively into the Roman Catholic Church largely through what we call the Jesuit agenda. Now, I want to turn now to page 8, same booklet. Jesuit Mystical Spirituality and the Evangelical Protestant Church. So, if the methods of converting lost or prodigal souls back to Rome have changed, what is the method to accomplish these goals today? It is largely through what is called Jesuit spirituality. A 2002 book titled Contemplatives in Action, The Jesuit Way, reveals how the Jesuit order has had and continues to have a great influence in people around the world. It attributes this vitality to its spirituality, which has also evoked fierce loyalty and fierce opposition. What is the spirituality of the Jesuits that was so controversial? By their very roots, Jesuits are proponents of mystical prayer practices. The founder of the Jesuits, Ignatius Loyola, created spiritual exercises that incorporated mysticism, including Lectio Divina, and I'll talk more about that down the road when we get into a more thorough study of contemplative spirituality. Today, millions of people worldwide practice the spiritual exercises of Ignatius Loyola. One Jesuit priest who resonates with this mystical spiritual outlook is Anthony de Mello, the author of Sadhana, A Way to God. De Mello, who embraced the mysticism of Hinduism, is often quoted today by contemplative and emerging authors. It doesn't take long, I'm not going to read his quote here, but I'm going to move on. It doesn't take long to find De Mello within the evangelical Protestant camp. In fact, Richard Foster, one of the pioneers of the evangelical spiritual formation contemplative movement, wrote the introduction to one of De Mello's books, The Sacrament of the Present Moment. And in A Glimpse of Jesus, popular contemplative author Brennan Manning, who has passed away, quotes De Mello. Amazon shows that De Mello's book, The Sacrament of the Present Moment, is cited in 82 books, some of which are written by some of evangelicism's most popular authors, John Ortberg, Richard Foster, Jan Johnson, Philip Yancey, Calvin Miller. Incidentally, all of these are contemplative advocates. Another example of Jesuit influence in the evangelical Protestant church is the Be Still DVD. This is an older DVD from about 10 years back or so, maybe a little later, farther back, where Richard Foster quotes 18th century Jesuit priest Jean-Nicolas Grau as saying, "O divine master, teach me this mute language which says so much." This mute language Grau speaks of is the mystical silence practiced by contemplatives and mystics throughout all religions. One of the key figures in the new progressive Christianity today is Leonard Sweet. Sweet has partnered on a number of occasions with Rick Warren and speaks at evangelical events frequently. He, in Sweet's book, Quantum Spirituality, he states, "Mysticism, once cast to the sidelines of the Christian tradition, is now situated in postmodernist culture near the center. In the words of one of the greatest theologians of the 20th century, Jesuit philosopher of religion, dogmatist Karl Rahner, the Christian of tomorrow will be a mystic, one who has experienced something, or he will be nothing. Mysticism is metaphysics arrived at through mind-body experiences." And Leonard Sweet, by the way, is really a progressive Christian. And, you know, I will also address him when I speak of, you know, not only contemplatives and emergents, but progressives, others who are part of this vast left-wing conspiracy, may I dare say. That's, you know, my title, Liberalism, the New Improved Broad Road to Destruction, as we see the various forms in which the new liberalism takes. Now, how fitting that Sweet would quote a Jesuit priest's prediction about the Christian of the future. Tony Campolo, yet another progressive that I will address into greater detail down the road, he's another popular figure in the evangelical church, reveals something quite interesting in his book, Letters to a Young Evangelical. In the book, he explains the role mysticism had in him becoming a Christian. He states, "I learned about this way of having a born-again experience from reading Catholic mystics, especially the spiritual exercises of Ignatius Loyola. Now another on page 11. "If Protestants and evangelicals can be convinced to practice mysticism, that is, contemplative, this conditions them to begin embracing Rome and even all religions. It's important to understand that mysticism is the bridge that unites all the religions of the world. In order to unite them, there would need to be a uniting common denominator, so to speak. That common uniting medium is mysticism. Thomas Merton recognized this in a conversation he was having with a Sufi master. The topic of Christian atonement arose." And I mentioned that in the other booklet, so I'm not going to repeat that. I'm going to move on. Tilden Edwards, co-founder of the Shalem Institute, where popular teacher Ruth Haley Barton was educated, would agree with Merton. He said, "This mystical stream, contemplative prayer, is the Western bridge to Far Eastern spirituality." And in a New Age book titled As Above, So Below, the author states, quoting Aldous Huxley, whom Rick Warren happens to quote in The Purpose-Driven Life, that the metaphysical mystical that recognizes a divine reality is the highest common factor that links the world's religious traditions. And even evangelical-turned-emerging author Tony Campolo recognizes this commonality in mysticism when he states, "Beyond these models of reconciliation of theology a theology of mysticism provides some hope for common ground between Christianity and Islam. Okay. I'm looking at my clock, and I'm, as always, battling the clock. Perhaps the best way to understand the Jesuit agenda that undermines biblical Christianity is to recognize the move toward a so-called social gospel that unites the religions of the world for the cause of peace. Like mysticism, this social gospel is a vehicle through which all religions will be united. Who would have believed this could have happened to the Protestant evangelical church? But we have, as we've been warned in Scripture, Satan's ministers are transformed as the ministers of righteousness. 2 Corinthians 11:15. Rick Warren has been one of the many Pied Pipers of this move to unite through good works. Called America's Pastor, Warren has become the evangelical Protestant spokesperson for a one-world religion. Willow Creek also has helped to escalate this global religious body as well through their global leadership summits. That's Bill Hybel. Warren and Hybel, proteges of Peter Drucker, by the way, have advanced the Jesuit agenda by leaps and bounds. By the way, both of them really were mentored also by Robert Schuller, who is the arch heretic that some of us know a lot about, and we will all talk about him down the road as well. The emerging church movement, which has been widely propagated by Warren, Hybels, and a host of other Christian figures, has been used by Satan to quickly bring about this worldwide deception. So by introducing mystical experiences and the social gospel to an entire generation of young people, boy, he nailed that. Now, are they nailed that? Now, quickly, with the time I have remaining, I have an interview that was done with T.A. McMahon of the Brian Call, Dave Hunt's organization, with Greg Durrell, a former Catholic turned pastor. And they, if I can get through this quickly, he talks a little bit about the outreach of Francis to Kenneth Copeland and some of the charismatics. But what I wanted to get to is Rick Warren. It says, I know exactly. Okay, Rick Warren, by definition, by what he teaches in his positions, was qualified as an apostate, that he has departed from God's word. He would be basically a heretic because he has embraced Rome. He has embraced the Pope. He's acknowledged the Pope as a Christian leader. The Pope has no gospel. He has a false gospel. So if Rick Warren is born from above, if Rick Warren is saved, then he has no business having any fellowship with Pope Francis. His directive then would be to evangelize Pope Francis. So let me move along here with the time that we have. So what are we focusing on? The ecumenical spirit is growing, and so you have to bring all religions together. So it's going to take named people, somebody who can attract a crowd. So from the evangelical side, you have Rick Warren. So the enemy uses Warren to do what? To tell all the evangelicals that Roman Catholicism is just like us. That's a lie. That's not true. And I had another article, I'm not going to have time for it, called No, Jesus Was Not a Socialist. That's also from the Berean Call. That's from the June 6th, 2016, so actually a very recent article that you can get for yourself. Anyway, I am out of time. God bless you all, and we will see you, or you will hear me, next week. And keep your eyes on the skies. Jesus is coming soon. God bless. Bye.